Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Happy August bank holiday weekend, friends, and welcome to the podcast. Follow us on Spotify right now and you'll get this every Friday. It's a selection of my favourite chats from the last few days as a warm ear hug just for you. So, on this week's episode, the crack that happens when you send a Kilmainham granny to Paris, the joyous sound of Hollywood's golden era, and we track down the famous Croke Park injured seagull and name him Squawk Eye. Our first chat is with Pam Coughlin, who is 91 years of age and is in Paris supporting her granddaughter, who's representing Australia at the Olympics. She was one of the most beloved guests for some time because she had us all in stitches laughing away, and she was full of warmth about her story. She blagged her way to the front row VIP section of the judo contest at the Olympics in her fetching red beret and indoor sunglasses. This is all true. She was rocking it, she was. After that, conductor Niall Kinsella and West End star from Salt Hill Aoife Mulholland joined us to tell us about a national concert hall show that's coming up. It covers the great MGM musicals of the 1940s and 1950s and about Aoife's time with Andrew Lloyd Webber on a reality telly show on the BBC some years ago, and how Terenure Niall seems to be far too young to be a conductor. Really enjoyed that chat and it got us into that sort of Saturday afternoon movie vibe. And at the end of the podcast, we go to Dan Donoher from Kildare Wildlife Rescue, who is taking care of the famous Croke Park seagull. The seagulls, you remember, spent half an hour at the pitch of the Galway Armagh game with a broken wing, and we were wondering when can he be released back into the wild, and it got our listeners involved in naming him as well. All a bit of crack. That's everything in the podcast. Next Tuesday, I'll be back on the wireless RT Radio 1, 9 till 10 every weekday. So let's start the weekend podcast. No shortage of support for Team Ireland, don't worry. But there are other Irish people, or semi-Irish people, or the children of Irish people abroad representing other countries. And one of them is Aoife Coughlin. And she represented Australia in the judo. Now, sadly, she didn't get through her knockout stages there. But her Dublin granny, Pam Coughlin, has been with her all the way. And she has captured the love and attention of the internet. Let's meet Pam. I think she's still in Paris. Pam Coughlin, good morning.
Good morning. Bonjour, Oliver.
Bonjour to you. Bon matin. Listen, Pam Coughlin, wow, this is the energy we expect. Your grandson, Mark Coughlin, the journalist, we know him here, he posted online that you're at the Olympics and there are fabulous photographs of your fashion, which we'll get into in a second. 500,000 people have viewed this news already. But I believe you want to begin with a fact check because he says you're his 92-year-old granny.
That's quite right, yes. That's excellent, yes. He's very good.
He is right, okay. Yes. I thought you were correcting us as 91. No, it's 92.
Well, I'm on my way to 92. Let's say that. We don't compromise. We compromise.
Oh, you're protecting the journalistic integrity there. 91-year-old man. Very good. The photograph of you online, you seem to have talked your way into, like, not the front row of the audience, you seem to be in an area where usually the coaches and the people with the Olympians would be. Explain if you will.
Explain how I got there. Well, I didn't do anything spectacular, actually. I just smiled at everyone. I'm a very friendly kind of a person, like, you know.
Yeah.
I just smiled because I was enjoying myself immensely, and all the security people and the volunteers were all very helpful. And when they saw me coming in, I suppose it was on account of my age. Like, I do look like 91, you know.
You do not.
Like, but I'm able to hobble along well, all right. But my smile is all right. So I just sat down in the seats that he had booked.
A smile
and
opens
rather small,
all doors.
Yeah. Yeah, and there happened to be the barrier in front, and it was just in line with my vision. And one of the security crowds noticed that, and she came along and she said, Would you like to move, she says, just down a little bit nearer the mast light.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, well, I don't want to go on the mast. I just want to stay on the seat. And she said, well, we'll just move you down there, she says, and you'll have a better view. And we were right in front of mast one, and that's where Aoife, my granddaughter,
Aoife Coughlan, in the judo.
Right.
Yeah.
In the judo, and won her first fight, but then she was beaten in her second fight, unfortunately. But the girl that beat her in the second fight actually won a silver medal. She was the German girl.
Ah, right.
So that was, she was in good company, like.
And you're really proud of your granddaughter, aren't you, Aoife, who represented Australia?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Well, I gave her her first cuddle when she was 4 months old in Australia.
Lovely.
And I'm cuddling her ever since. And I gave her several cuddles yesterday. I'm that kind of a person. I'm a cuddly person.
we can hear. We can hear, exactly. What part of the world are you from, Pam?
Oh, I'm from Dublin.
Yeah,
Dublin,
which
born and bred.
Which bit of Dublin?
Up in Kilmainham.
Kilmainham.
Around Kilmainham.
Dublin
area. Yeah. It's a heritage village now.
It is. It's a heritage.
It's just a heritage village. Yeah. All the dinosaurs like me live up there.
You sound far from a dinosaur. And you've had a previous grandchild in the Olympics as well for Australia.
Yes, that was in 2016. I was over in Brazil as well. My family are very supportive of me. Yeah, they bring me everywhere with them.
That's lovely. And I must say, we saw a picture of you from the 2016 Rio Olympics, and you had a lovely wide-brimmed hat. And your fashion choice in Paris is very, very fetching. Can you explain what you were wearing at the judo?
Well, I was only wearing the red beret because it was raining here yesterday morning. I also had the sun hat with me, which I'm wearing this morning.
Very good.
And you can't see me. And I'm meeting Aoife for lunch now, and maybe the coach might be with them later on today. So I'll be wearing the hat.
The red beret was very, very fetching. And big sunglasses indoors. I mean, this is how cool a granny you are.
Yeah, well, you see, the thing was, they had all those discos and strobe lighting and all, and it was all flashing, you know. So I decided I'd do a bit of incognito, like the people in Ireland mightn't recognise me, if you understand.
Oh, no, you look like a really rocking 60s spy. It looks very good. What will you come here, with your wonderful years and your lovely laughter, what will you say to Aoife Coughlan to comfort her now after the end of her Olympic journey?
Her to be very proud, because the great achievement on her part, like, you know, to actually get there. And once an Olympian, always an Olympian.
And
it was a bit sad for her that her mum and dad couldn't be here, because we all had it planned for a family meeting. They were coming over from Australia, and her mum had to have surgery very suddenly.
Oh dear!
And unfortunately, they couldn't travel. You know, actually, she's having surgery, I think, later on today.
We wish her well.
So hoping everything
goes
well. Yeah.
And it's your son Paul is the connection here, isn't he? He emigrated. How long ago did he move to Australia?
Oh, he's 30 years over there now.
Go away.
30 years, well established over there now, And I met lovely people. Everywhere you go, there's always somebody Irish. And I met a lovely lady yesterday from one of the security staff, and she was from Ireland. Her name is Loretta Doyle. I'm only mentioning her name because her dad still lives in Ireland. So she said to say hello to her dad.
Doyle from Olympic Ireland.
Lovely person. She lives in Scotland, so I gave her a cuddle as well. And if I was beside you there this morning, Oliver, I'd give you a cuddle as well.
I could well believe it. PamCoughlanCuddles.com. I think feels like it's going to be a thing.
I'm calling myself a loopy groupie now.
A loopy groupie?
A loopy groupie, yes.
Oh, that's great.
I said that to the Australian girl that had a chat with her yesterday. I think she was at the Italian team or something, the Australian team. And she looked at me if I was mad, but I am a bit mad anyway. So, I mean, it's good to be mad.
Beautifully mad. And come here, can I ask you, because you're a person full of energy, as we can hear. Life in Kilmainham, what do you do? What are your hobbies over there?
Like you do, well, I play bridge a couple of nights a week.
Very nice.
And I do a bit of walking. And I used to play table tennis and I used to play pitch foot. That was all before COVID. So I had to kind of give them up because the clubs kind of got small and the elderly people didn't come back. You know that way?
Yeah, table tennis.
Yeah, table tennis. I was a bit of a dear of the table tennis.
It's a fast game. Yeah. That's a fast game. You love it.
Well, no, it was at a slow pace, Oliver, you know.
I don't think the ping pong moves would feel that way. Can I ask you, Pam, because you have, look, you're at a beautiful age. How are you so happy?
How am I so, well, I have a very good sense of humour.
You
right?
Do.
And I eat a very balanced diet and I keep very active. I walk every day and I'm able to drive still. And I have my driving license still. And my eyesight's very good. And also the grey cells matter's very good. So, like Jenny, the old knees are a bit wonky, all right. But other than that, I'm grand.
Should we have that in our 40s? But listen, you're incredible. I could talk to you all day. And I'm sorry, you lost your husband
but
a few
years. Don't, because everyone must be fed up listening to me.
Not at all. I'm sorry, you lost your husband a couple of years ago. Not that long ago.
I was here 10 years ago.
10 years
before Noel died, yeah. We were a good team, yeah. And I have four lovely sons and daughter-in-laws, 12 grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren.
Ah, you're
so
a great granny.
I'm a very lucky woman.
You're a very, very...
A great granny, 3 times, yeah. I have Killian, Via and Harrison. They're the 3 great-grandchildren. I won't tell you all about them. the grandchildren.
You'll cuddle them instead.
I love them all to bits.
You do.
I love them all to bits.
There's a text coming in from us. Pam says, "That is some woman. I'm only 78. She would put me to shame." And somebody says, "Never mind."
Not at all. All you have to do is make your mind. Motivation is the word, and a sense of humour, and an odd glass of white wine.
Oh, lovely! The odd glass of white wine.
Maybe a glass of champagne just to celebrate, you know, a special occasion.
I think every day is a special occasion.
All in moderation. Everything in moderation,
in your
all
life.
Of us.
Except moderation.
Moderation.
Yeah, very good. You got there, Henry. Never mind laughing, Harris. Your 90-year-old guest, 90-plus, Pam, has been the most fabulous, contagious laugh. My morning facial exercise has been released as this person. So you're getting everybody to do their regular exercise. What an amazing granny. Inspiration. Infectious laugh from Aoife. Pam, people love you.
Thank you. Well, I mean, I love everybody. I love meeting people. And I'm as happy as Ari. Not a bother of me, thank God.
Brilliant. We should make
and
you our Olympics
thankful.
Reporter at this point. Pam, you enjoy yourself. And the whole,
and
all of our...
Thank you, and I will.
Our show is sending you a cuddle.
And thank you very much. And I'll return the cuddle.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Enjoy your time in Paris. And enjoy lunch. He's going to have lunch with an Olympian. Oh, that was the best. That was that rescue. Bye bye, bye, Sloan. Thank you so much. That rescued us from America. Absolutely. Pam is a better laugh than Camillus. This Mrs. Loads of messages coming in for. Thank you for having Pam on. She's a lovely lady. She's made me laugh. Reminds me of my late fabulous mother-in-law. Nothing like Dublin wit.
Text 51551. Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
Now, I mentioned, of course, Operation Squawk Eye. Do you remember we were talking about the injured seagull that played 24 minutes in the All-Ireland football final, the men's final last weekend? And we were on to Dan Dan Donoher, wouldn't it be, in Kildare, wildlife manager there, to find out how the seagull... Are we going to be able to release the seagull into the wild is what we've been wondering all week. Dan is on the line. Dan Donoher, thanks so many for joining us again from Kildare Wildlife Rescue. Yes.
Good morning.
Tom and Galway helped us call the seagull Squawk Eye. How is Squawk Eye doing right now this morning, Dan?
Doing very well. Yeah, he's just had his breakfast of sprats. He's had about 10 sprats this morning.
Sprat? So what's a
doing
sprat?
Doing very well. Yeah, that's it. He's getting treated very well. I don't think Dustin the Turkey is no longer the most famous bird in Ireland.
No, definitely not. And I don't think Dustin eats sprats either. Is that fish, is it? I presume it's fish.
It's small fish.
Very good. And so the wing is on the mend?
Yeah, it's just not 100% yet. So we're just going to give him another 4 or 5 days just to rest.
Oh, so there'll be no release of Squawk Eye today?
No release today, I'm afraid.
Stand everybody down from around. And you have to release Squawk Eye back into the vicinity of Croke Park, I believe, because that's...
Yeah, exactly. So that's where they would be nesting. That's their home territory. So yeah, we'll go back close by to Croke Park there.
The people of Dublin 3 are really missing Squawk Eye at 5 a.m. in the morning. But but if it'll be 4 or 5 days, Squawk Eye will be released.
Yeah, all going well. Yeah, we're going to reassess that wing again on Tuesday. So we'll know more then whether we're going to go ahead the next week. But hopefully he's doing very well, very settled and eating well. So
What's he doing in the meantime? Is he just hanging out in a cage? Does he get a view?
Yeah, so he's got an enclosure where he's just kind of hanging out and just resting.
It's
kind of secluded, so it's not to stress him out, because obviously wildlife can get very stressed out. Yeah. So he's been kept very quiet in a nice, lovely pen.
A quiet seagull. It's everybody's dream. Come here to me. He's going to be okay, and maybe you'll barbecue some of the squats, because squats, whatever they are, for the bank holiday weekend. Because it's sunny and all.
Scratch, yeah, he'll be looked after well over the weekend. We have our volunteers are amazing. They work, you know, at this time of year it's a really busy time, so it's working from early morning to late at night. So he'll be looked after well over the weekend, as well as the other 480 animals we have at the minute.
Oh my God, 480 animals! It's a busy place. I mean, you got loads of attention over after our discussion the other day, all over the place. BBC and everything covered Squawk Eye's condition.
It really has.
This is handy for you because you're fundraising for something.
Yeah, so at the moment we're fundraising for a wildlife ambulance. Mm-hmm. We have an amazing team of wildlife responders that we've trained that go out and rescue animals in the Leinster area. But this ambulance would be a real benefit to them, to support them, to help more animals, and to, you know, it'll be kitted out with cages, we'll have specialised rescue equipment, and then some first aid before the animals are brought then to the vets or back down to the wildlife centre here in Kildare Town.
Brilliant.
So we're really hoping that people can get behind this fundraiser so that we can get this ambulance on the road in the next few months.
And people can donate by looking up Kildare Wildlife Rescue on your online bits and pieces, isn't that right?
Yeah, that's it. We have the link up there on the GoFundMe, and we share it every day. So hopefully people will be able to. Doesn't matter if it's only €5, the price of a coffee. It does matter, and will help us to achieve our goal.
To get the wildlife. Dan, how long are you in as a volunteer there with Kildare Wildlife Rescue?
So I've been volunteer. I was always interested in wildlife, but since I was 17, kind of start working for domestic rescue. And then it's when I noticed kind of there was birds or rabbits coming to the gate that they had nowhere else to go. So we decided then to put more effort into wildlife, and it kind of grew from there over the years. And I've met some fantastic people. And then just 2 years ago, set up Kildare Wildlife Rescue. So that's just a dedicated charity.
Oh my God, right, very good.
Yeah, with a group of other individuals. You know, I'm only one part of, you know, many people within the organisation who all work tirelessly to achieve what we're doing. I'm just a manager, but we've 120 volunteers all over the organisation.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a big operation, and so many people are fantastic.
Good people and doing great work. By the way, you sound very young. When you were 17, is that a long time ago?
It's 20 years ago. Yeah.
20 years ago? I would not have guessed that. Wow. Well, Dan Donoher,
even though all the long nights, still doing okay, I think.
yeah, very good. Listen, Dan, thank you so much. We'll check in with you again, see how Squawk Eye, tell him we were all asking after him, and tell him to enjoy the sprats and enjoy the bank holiday. And you do too.
Thanks a million, you too.
We'll be back. Right. We'll be back to release Squawk Eye into the wild. Thank you. That's Dan Donoher from Kildare Wildlife Rescue.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
Now, welcome back. The Sound of Hollywood, the best of MGM musicals, is coming to the National Concert Hall in early September. We'll give you the exact dates, all the details very shortly. So whether you're into it, it is 100 years celebration of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios, the iconic musical films of the 1940s and the films and the 50s, The Wizard of Oz, I'm Singing in the Rain, High Society. We'll come into it in a minute, but joining me in studio, Irish conductor and pianist Niall Kinsley. You're very welcome, Niall. And a West End musical star, Aoife Mulholland, you're very welcome.
Thank you so much
for coming into us.
Thank you for having us.
We played a little clip there at the start to put people in a merry mood. It did straight away. It worked for me straight away.
Because
I think the thing about this music is it's just, we all grew up with it, you know, whether we realise that or not. They always seem to be on TV on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
So there was always, you know, and I just was enthralled by them. I'd sit down and watch them. And it wasn't until years later that I realized I've actually seen this before. So I think they're kind of all, they're in our like.
It's in that lovely, happy Saturday afternoon vibe.
Yeah. And they're
the Wizard
so joyful.
Of Oz and Singing in the Rain. Oh, those classics. Absolutely love them.
They are really feel good and joyful. And they're full of such color and energy and happiness, really.
Yeah. Which is, we'll come into the big music as a moment, but I want to get everybody to know to know you both. Actually, I'll start with you, Aoife, if that's okay.
Yeah.
You have an astounding background, actually. you started in How to Solve a Problem Like Maria. People will remember the beat. When was that?
Yeah, oh, jeepers, many moons ago. Probably about 17 years ago now.
Must have been a child.
Yeah, I think I've blocked it out of my memory.
It was a huge show, though, wasn't it?
It was huge, yeah. BBC One, Saturday night, 8 p.m. Yeah.
And you'd come over from where to make your name in London?
So yeah, I was studying in London. I was just finished my master's in musical theatre.
Oh yeah.
And I had no agent, no auditions, and then this thing came up. My course leader said, "Do any of you want to audition for this?" And I thought, "Oh God, reality TV, really?" But I'd nothing else on, so I said, okay, I'll give it a go. And never thinking I'd get
this
far.
Was the thing.
Yeah. And myself and my friend Abby Finlay, we auditioned together and we just kept getting through round after round after round. And then the next thing we discovered, we were in the final 10 live BBC. And I remember looking at her going, jeepers, this wasn't supposed to happen, Abby. What are we doing here? And the penny dropped then. And I think at one stage, 10 million people were watching us. Yeah, it was crazy. And it was live TV. So, you know yourself, live TV, how nerve-wracking it can be. And it was great.
And the prize was?
The prize was to play Maria on the West End in the Sound of Music, London Palladium. And I didn't win the prize at the time. No. I came fourth. But actually, my first job then out of that was Roxy in Chicago, Roxy Hart. So, you know, I didn't do too badly.
Yeah.
And then I think when Andrew Lloyd Webber saw that, you know, I could actually do, you know, Roxy on the West End leading role, he got me in then eventually to play Maria.
How long ago was it since you've listened to yourself on
BBC? Oh, do you know what? I've actually never watched the programmes. I've never watched them.
I have a small clip here.
Oh, here we go.
It's 2006. This is you singing. You'll have to stick on your ear goggles to hear it because I want to hear it in its full thing. Let me put up this thing here now. This is You'll Never Walk Alone. Oh. It's crying now again in a second.
Gorgeous. Oh, you're getting emotional.
Do you know,
now,
that actually so doesn't gorgeous. Sound too bad. That song sends chills down my spine, and I'll tell you why. During rehearsals, the vocal coach was saying, "Yeah, you're doing great." I was like, "Are you sure I could do anything better?" She's like, no, keep going." And I remember Andrew came in and he listened to it and he had tears in his eyes. So I thought, "Okay, I'm doing something right." And then when I finished the song and went up to be, you know, judged by the judges, the vocal coach said to me, "You blew it. You absolutely blew it."
Really?
she completely threw me under the bus. So for me to hear that now, I'm like, "Oh God, where did I blow it?" Yeah. And that wasn't too bad. I'm actually quite happy with that performance. But and then afterwards I went up to her and I said, "Why did you say that after, you know, being through rehearsals?" And she said, "We're making a TV show, darling."
Oh, she said to me,
I was like, okay, now I get the game here.
Might have been
TV.
Nice to let you know in advance that some of the things came
jeepers.
With the camera. It was 2006.
2006. Wow. Oh, wow.
As you say, you didn't actually win the series, but you got huge exposure. You actually did end up playing Maria.
I did,
on the West End.
I played it for about 18 months in the Palladium. It was amazing. Such an amazing experience with a big orchestra as well. You know, I think it was a 30-piece orchestra.
Oh, wow.
Fabulous.
And you grew up in Salt Hill?
I did. Galway? Yeah, Salt Hill, Galway, yes.
As you were wandering along the prom there as a child. I mean, this is the stuff of dreams, isn't it?
I know. Like, it took me a long time to bite the bullet and actually do it. You know, I was in my kind of early 20s before I thought, you know, I have to just go for it and go to London. And glad I did it now. And I think I'm probably thankful for that programme because it got me my foot in the door and I haven't looked back. So, yeah.
What was the West End success like? You mentioned Roxy Hart, Chicago.
Yeah, Chicago.
What else did you play?
Maria, then I went into Legally Blonde. I played Brooke in Legally Blonde, where I had to sing and skip at the same time, which was fun. And and then I did Chess with Idina Menzel in the Royal Albert Hall.
Really?
With Tim Rice. Yeah, that was fabulous. That was great. So a lot of exciting things.
And along the way, you obviously, Andrew Lloyd Webber, who was in the show, that's the Andrew you referenced casually. You got to know him.
I did, yeah. He's a lovely man, lovely musical genius. And
if he wasn't, would you say?
Not at all. I couldn't.
Go on.
But he can be ruthless as well. I remember he came in to watch the dress rehearsal of The Sound of Music. And he didn't like one of the actors, the guy playing Von Trapp, and he said he's gone. So there was a week before the show, and they had to get another guy in to learn the show. You know, yourself, you know, learning a script in a week, learning all the, you know, where to stand and all the movements and the songs. So yeah.
For the record, I don't know myself.
You've been in shows as well. You have.
Would I do it to that caliber? That's unbelievable. Yeah, that's.
I know.
That's the business you're in.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a perfectionist, and I guess he has to be. He's very successful, and that's what you have to do sometimes, I think, yeah.
Was music always going to be your career? Did you have a job? This was all that you wanted to do.
Well, I kind of told myself I had to get a real job, for want of a better word, and I did a diploma in business studies after my degree, and I joined an insurance company for 2 years.
Oh, really?
I was the worst employee ever. I was still doing the musicals at night, and I'd be learning my lines under my desk, and I'm very sorry for my boss there. I wasn't great, and shortly after that I left for London.
And coming soon, Insurance the Musical. Niall, you look too young to be a conductor.
A lot of them are kind of sort of middle-aged, and I've learned that it probably takes that time to just get established, because, you know, it does take a long time to establish yourself. But here I am, and having a go at it. So,
we just especially precocious in the world of conducting.
Well, I don't know. I'm older than I look, actually. I'm definitely passionate about this music. Yeah. You know, I think it's the most amazing music, and it's music that we all, as I said earlier, we all kind of connect with.
We do. Now, Aoife obviously very quickly decided, you know, Insurance to Music, but you're a pianist who becomes a conductor. Obviously, you stay a pianist, I presume. But how do you make that transition? Or what?
Well, for years, I didn't really want to be a conductor, to be honest. You know, I always just wanted to play the piano. I work a lot with singers, and I adore working with singers. I think singers are the most amazing people in the world. I've always enjoyed that. And I kind of fell into it slightly by accident in 2012. And then I realised, well, I actually do enjoy it, and I'm good at it. And then I just kind of kept it up slightly. It was like a side hustle for a while. And then eventually, you know, it was kind of really since COVID that I thought, OK, well, I'm really going to sort of go for this now and really make this my main thing, particularly in this sort of Broadway, Hollywood repertoire.
Is that the type of music that clicked with you first?
Yeah, well, I've always loved it. But, you know, obviously I trained as a classical musician, and the majority of my work up until now has been, you know, in kind of classical stuff. But it's, you know, the thing about it is you can still apply all of the stuff you learn as a classical musician to this music, because it's all the same elements that are in it. It's just a different style, you know, just working a kind of more jazzy, popular style. So it's the thing I love is that it involves both of those elements, the classical world and the sort of more popular.
Music tends to run in families. Have you got huge family?
I don't come from a musical family at all. And actually, probably that's a blessing because, you know, I only ever did music for myself. Mm-hmm. It was never, you know, because my parents did it or because my siblings did it or anything like that. It was because I wanted to do it and it was always my thing. My family are so supportive. My parents have always been so supportive and my brother as well. So it's great that I have that, but I don't have that sort of pressure of, well, you have to live up to, you know, what your brother just did, or you have to live up to what your dad did.
Are they all doing different, very different things then?
Yeah. So, I mean, my brother's actually creative as well. He's a filmmaker. So he's made short films.
It's in the same vein.
Yeah. So he's kind of actually done some amazing things. They've won awards and everything. So like, you know, there's, but we're not competitive at all because,
What part of the world are you from, by the way?
I'm from Dublin.
Yeah. Why do Dublin people always just say Dublin? What part of Dublin?
It's like a slightly less interesting than somewhere else.
which bit of Dublin?
From Terenure.
Again, playing it down, going, you know, those things are interesting.
Nothing
too,
interesting to those say, but yeah. Part there, right? Lovely part of the world and very near everything. Very ideally
located. That's their tourist slogan.
Public transport.
Terenure, near everything. Yeah, you got facilities and services. Yeah. Back over to Galway. Yeah, your dad is very musical and an inspiring figure for you.
Yeah, so I came from a really musical family. My grandparents owned a hotel in Salt Hill, called the Hilltop Hotel. Oh, yeah. And a lot of young acts started off their career there, like John Kenny, Pat Short.
Really?
Who else? The Stunning, I think, had their first gig there. So I think quite the opposite to Niall, because I came from such a musical background and I saw firsthand how difficult it was. My uncles were professional musicians. My dad dabbled in it for a while. And I know how it's a really tough life, to try and pay the bills and getting, regular income. So that kind of nearly turned me off it for a while. And that's why I was so slow to actually go for it because to try and get the day job. But then I guess if it's inside you, it's very hard to...
Was there a nightclub in the hotel when you were growing up?
Yes.
What was that called?
It was all the Hilltop. Everything was the Hilltop.
Was it in the go in your time? Was it?
No, I was only six.
Oh, right, okay.
So, I never got to experience. But I'd listen upstairs, all myself and my cousins and my siblings would all just sit at the top of the stairs listening to... I still remember the song John Kenny used to sing.
Really?
Yeah. Joe Dolan.
There was jazz, a lot of jazz. He played a lot of jazz, didn't he?
Yeah.
Joe Dolan.
Joe Dolan
No
as
show
well.
Like a Joe show.
I know, love Joe.
Oh my God, if the walls could talk in there.
I know.
They would probably say.
The crack.
Powerhouse, Mina. I'm only joking. It's very interesting. Let's get into the MGM musicals and the sound of that Hollywood era. I have a longer version of the medley I've been playing to cheer us all up this morning. We'll begin there.
Forget your troubles, come on, get happy. Yep. You better chase all your cares away. Shout hallelujah, come on, get happy. Get ready for the judgment day.
Who wants to be a millionaire?
I don't.
Have flashy flunkies everywhere?
I don't.
Who wants the bother of a country estate?
A country estate is something I'd hate.
Singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feel, and I'm happy again.
We're straight into Saturday afternoon vibes. Is it okay at 9:45 on a Thursday?
Oh, I think any time of the day. Well, certainly for me, I'm a little bit obsessive about this music. So I would listen to this literally morning until
this night. Is your idea to bring it to the National Concert Hall. Next month. Where did this idea come from?
Well, firstly, I suppose the impetus for it was that this year marks 100 years since the beginning of MGM, which opened in 1924, the very early days of cinema, and that was a good few years before sound came in, which was 1929. And as soon as sound came in, I mean, musicals were there. So MGM were making musicals from, as soon as they could. But I suppose they really came into their own in the 1930s, 40s and 50s with this guy, Arthur Freed, who produced all these amazing musicals that we know now, like High Society, Wizard of Oz, Singing in the Rain, Annie Get Your Gun, all of those. So
And it evokes all the style, doesn't it? And the so huge stars, your Judy Garlands and Gene Kellys. And
yeah, I mean, they said at the time MGM had more stars than the Milky Way. And like literally it did. And these stars were, you know, it was like a factory of stars, actually. They would come in, they'd find these, you know, this raw talent and they would nurture the raw talent. They'd give them acting lessons, singing lessons, dancing lessons. And then they would mold these careers. So you had somebody like Judy Garland. I mean, she's probably not the best example because she was kind of, you know, she was kind of chewed up and spat out a little bit by the studios.
She didn't even live till 50.
Yeah. Oh. And she, I think she's probably a very tragic case, but, you know, they really, like somebody like Catherine Grayson, who was in, you know, Kiss Me Kate and Showboat and stuff like that. You know, they really sculpted her career. And these people became really phenomenal stars, and they controlled their media, you know, their PR and everything. They were MGM's biggest assets.
Yeah. And then the 60s arrive and that period just looks uncool. And they do something extraordinary.
Yeah, well, this is, I mean, I get shocked whenever I think about it. And anytime I've said it to people. So basically in the 1960s, MGM was losing a lot of money. Yeah. And they had a big shakeup and they brought in new kind of heads of MGM. And at the time, MGM, the music library had about 3.5 million items in it. It was the largest music library in America, second only to the Library of Congress. And the powers that be felt that this music library was a waste of space and they wanted to free up basically real estate on the MGM lot. And they ordered that it be completely stripped and all the music thrown into skips and sent to landfill. So when we think of like the scores, the handwritten, you know, sheet music of all these musicals, we think, oh God, they must be saved somewhere in a vault.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, they were actually thrown away. So they're somewhere,
It's the notes, it's the physical paper.
The notes,
paper,
yeah, all of those arrangements that are done for the orchestra to play from. So the full scores that a conductor conducts from and the orchestra parts that make this music essentially performable were thrown out. So somewhere, the beautiful song Somewhere Over the Rainbow, the handwritten music of that now lies somewhere. Under a golf course in
LA. A golf course,
like, it's the most bizarre.
Because that was the dump.
Yeah, so it's bizarre. There's a country club in LA that has all these absolute treasures. So
they would be rotted though, wouldn't they?
I think it's
metal box. Or
there's
something.
No saving that. You know,
imagine they just sell. You would thought they'd just flop them off.
Well, you know, they also had this, car crash of a decision as well to auction off like props and costumes and, you know, stuff from the films. And like I read somewhere that they let the ruby slippers, you know, Judy Garland's ruby slippers go for like 15 grand. They just sort of let it go because they wanted to make...
making money.
They wanted to make money. And I think the goal was to build the MGM Grand Hotel and Casino, which they did in 1973. And then, that burned down in 1980. So was it worth it?
Unbelievable.
So there you go. Granny in Paris, Gene Kelly needs wellies, and Going for Gull. We always give you things to dwell upon of a weekend. It's the end of the podcast, as you know it. If you've interesting stories and things you think we should definitely know, pop us an email anytime at all. Oliver@rte.ie. Simple as that. Happy bank holiday to you all. Farewell, slán, and thanks.
0818 715 925. Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.